Welcome to the AI Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Schaefer. Today on the podcast, we have the pleasure of being joined with Fedor Shtanov, who is a seasoned AI expert with over 18 years of experience in machine learning and product development. Formerly a principal scientist at AWS, he now serves as the head of AI at Toloka, who is focusing on creating state-of-the-art responsible AI technologies with human oversight. A thought leader in the field, Fedor has contributed to VentureBeat and is really passionate about bridging kind of the gap between machine learning and human insight. Welcome to the show today.
Thanks a lot, Dia. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the intro.
Super excited to have you on the show. I wanted to kick this thing off and kind of ask you a little bit about your journey. And if you could walk us through, what that looked like. You were a principal scientist at AWS, and now you're kind of the head of AI. Did you always know that you were interested in AI and kind of this tech space? Growing up, or is this something that you discovered as you were going through school? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, actually, if you ask me specifically about AI, I was doing some applied mathematics and numerical methods, and then I found a scientific supervisor who was like, hey, there's this machine learning thing, and it's pretty cool. And I was back in 20 or something, and everybody was using support vector machines at the time, and we found a really cool application for of support vector machine to plasma physics. And wow, this is a really neat way of automating really complex discoveries which physicists do. And so this is kind of how the journey started. Then I did my PhD in computer science and worked in a few companies like Amazon, Microsoft, AWS. But what's also curious, and actually hope that machine learning folks can hear me, because I think that's worthwhile. At some point, I realized that everybody in the AI is about automation. Everybody's like, okay, let's automate this, let's automate that. But the real beneficiary out of all of this should, at the end of the day, be humans. And how do you make AI really beneficial for humans? How do you make sure that humans stay in the loop when the AI makes decisions? How do you make sure that the AI makes decisions which are useful? And this is the area where I kind of shifted a few years ago, actually about 5 or 6 years ago. And in AWS, I was working in the same area as well. And so again, from AWS moved to Toloka to progress in that area of human in the loop. And now I'm head of AI and chief scientist in Toloka.
That's super cool. I'm wondering, could you tell us a little bit? It sounds like an incredible background, and you've been working in this for a long time, so you've seen this whole thing evolve a lot. Could you tell us a little bit about what got you interested in Toloka moving, right? You obviously probably had a great job over at AWS. I know a bunch of folks that work there, and it's a fairly good place to be, whatnot. What kind of got you interested in moving to this kind of new company and this new idea?
Yeah. Actually, happy to share this. So imagine that you're doing artificial intelligence, and you're thinking, well, how do I make it useful? How do I make my models? And then you very often, before the age of large language models, you often had to collect labeled data. You had to say, which data is good, which data is bad, and you had to go through this process of collecting data, which is getting feedback from humans. And very often you see in the papers where it's hard, it's expensive, it's a manual process where you have to work with humans and not math and algorithms. And for tech people, sometimes it's tough. And then you realize that there is this area, which is crowdsourcing, which is basically like you have humans all around the world who some of them have nothing to do. Some of them, really want to earn a little bit of money on the side. Some of them want to earn a fair amount of money. And then you think, how do I include them in the process of making AI? And so this is where Toloka, in my opinion, excels. It's really incredible. It's better than many, many others, if not better. Everyone is doing this job of involving humans around the world into the AI making process. And this becomes a much more technological problem than the problem of normal human collaboration or normal human management. So it's a technological problem to collecting, working with humans, technological way of working with humans, technological solution to that problem. And this is what is really cool, I think, about Toloka. It's a technological platform for dealing with humans and contributing to the AI.
Super fascinating background. I love what you are working on. I'm wondering if you could share some success stories where human in the loop, processes significantly improved AI performance.
Yeah, let me recall a couple of stories from the background. One of the things which is certainly worth noticing is that humans are always present in improving AI performance. Humans are basically crucial. This is like how it's AI is built. Before LLMs, you use humans, as I mentioned, to provide ground truth labels on which an AI is trained, and then says this is good, this is bad. Humans were those who provided the labels. Now with LLMs, you still have the same thing. You have this alignment process where you ask LLMs to produce results which sound better to humans, which actually reply to human queries. So like, without the human involvement, you very rarely get useful AI. But if you think about the human in the loop, in the usual way people understand it, where the models and machines at the same time work together to achieve like a better benefit, the most popular example is probably the moderation example, the example where, let's say, there's a lot of user content, like texts to some forums, or maybe some images are submitted to a website, and then you need to filter out in real time, bad images, inappropriate images, or bad content. Right? So you usually build a model, and then very often the model doesn't give you high enough accuracy. And so you trust the model when the model is confident. You don't trust the model when the model is not confident. You rely on humans to fill this gray area. Complex cases. That's one example. Now, the more fun examples are, I'd say, if you think about, say, Amazon Go. So Amazon Go, if you're not familiar with it, if you haven't heard about it, is a cashierless store. So you enter the store, you take whatever products you want, and you leave. The way it works is that there's a lot of canvas in the ceiling of that store, and they track the person who enters. They see what they take.
Right.
So the way it works is that there's machine learning which tracks you, which detects what you took, and then basically sends you a receipt afterwards to leave the store. So this happens very quickly after you leave the store. You get the receipt most of the time. But sometimes, if you toss your product to someone else, or if you try to trick the system where you give it to someone else and leave it with that product, or you try to put the product in the wrong place and then you take it from the wrong place, it took a few years ago quite some time before you get the receipt. And the reason for that, at least the rumors say, is that the complex cases were monitored, were actually observed by real humans, and then they were checking.
Oh, okay.
So that's a more of a fun example. Then there's another fun example. When Yandex was building a personal assistant, it's something similar to Amazon Alexa or Google's personal assistant, Alice. So before they even released, just when they started collecting data, basically the engineers were given this chatbot, like a preliminary version of a chatbot, to ask this chatbot questions, and then the chatbot would give them answers. And the engineers were talking with that chatbot, thinking that they're talking to some really better version of the model, and then someone decided to find out, oh, where is this model hosted? What's the computer? And then they didn't find the computer when the model was hosted, and they figured out that the whole process was actually built in a way that when the engineers asked the question, it's the real people, assessors, who answered those questions, basically in the process of data collection. That's another fun story of how human AI helps in getting used to things.
That's super cool. Yeah, those are awesome stories. Really interesting. I had no idea. So that's some cool insights. I'm wondering, how does Toloka ensure the quality of human labeled data across, such a diverse languages and countries and all that?
Sure. That's a good question. As I mentioned before, Toloka approaches this way of the problem of getting data or interacting with humans through a technological perspective. Basically, think about what kind of abstractions, what kind of tools can help you get higher quality data. And so there is actually quite a variety of popular crowdsourcing tools which help you get a higher quality data. So first, you give people entry tests. So for some tasks where you don't want people to waste their time, you actually give some sort of fairly simple, usually tests for how well they perform. Okay. Let's say, do they know English? Do they know Spanish? Do they know on a server level? Then you want to actually get certain high proficiency, you give people training, and then there's process of actually giving people training. It's not a manual process. You design training tasks, pass training tasks to people where you say, this is a task, please perform it, and then say, perform it, and say, no, you're incorrect. We chose this answer, but you should have chosen that answer. This is why. And so people learn this way, and then they get through a second test or exam, which is, of course, higher quality, or like ensures that you can perform, you know, the person can perform at a better level. And so then you, the person is allowed to perform real tasks. However, there are some people, of course, who are trying to cheat through the system and who are trying to get through training and exam by themselves, and then they try to automate or not really get cancer. So to avoid this, we have other tools, which is we actually have so-called honeypots, where basically somewhere in the middle of your answers, there's an answer with a known, there's a question with a known answer. And if the person answers incorrectly too many times to those kind of questions, they're not allowed to perform the tasking. And so incorporating those honeypots into the process of labeling, into checking, regular checking of performance is a crucial part of high-quality labeling. And those honeypots are built by a more trustworthy people, most trustworthy assessors who have been tested by themselves, by even higher, more trustworthy experts. So basically you have this pyramid of, you know, quality feedback providers. And so the, you know, the more expert cheese you require from the provider, usually the rare chance you have to find them. And so as a result, you have a lot of people who have to be checked by trustworthy people, and those have to be checked by experts. So this is the way we approach our getting hackers.
Okay, very interesting. That's that's a problem I had not really thought about the solution to solve. It's fascinating how you guys are currently working on it. You know, with all of this that you're currently working on, what do you think are some of the ethical challenges that, you know, maybe yourself, but also the AI community needs to address urgently? What's kind of on your radar right now?
So to me, there's a lot of discussions right now about, generative AI, about large language models, about putting some sort of government restrictions on who can provide those models. In my opinion, who can build those models. In my opinion, what's quite problematic is that right now there isn't that much of a variety of models which are high performing and which can be easily representative of the various groups of people. Current high performing models are basically based on, quite frankly, biased data, and the data for which what is good data, what is bad data, is determined by a very small group of people who quite often do not represent some other groups which are interesting, some other groups which are important. And in my opinion, what's worth doing is actually being well open about how you construct a task to large language models, or these foundation models, sharing instructions or sharing the actual data for fine-tuning or aligning those models in a way that other interested members can build the models which are less biased to that specific small group. So that's quite important, because otherwise it's just influencing the whole society. You've seen the amount of people who started using ChatGPT, quite a lot of people. The influence of what kind of answers the models give is quite significant.
No, I think that's super important. It's something I definitely think a lot about, because of course, right now we have, like you mentioned, these large language models. We have OpenAI, we have, you know, Google and Meta, and really all of these companies coming up with these, it's a kind of a small bubble around San Francisco, really. And it's, and like, we all know that San Francisco has a lot of its own ideas. Some people love some of them, some people don't love all of them, but there are definitely different ideas all around the world that different people subscribe to or don't subscribe to. And so, yeah, having one small group of people create these essentially large models that, like, for Google's, you know, they're integrated in their search. This is going to be seen by billions of people around the world. Where do you see this going in the future in regards to that? Do you think that there's a place where someone like OpenAI or Google or Meta could create a model everyone would want? Or do you think, you know, at some point people are just going to say, look, I don't align with these large models on XYZ topics. I'm going to find maybe like there's, you know, thousands of models and this is the kind of the one that more aligns with my beliefs. Do you see the industry going in that direction?
So that's a great question, because people are betting either the model open source or that the open source is going to grow and what's going to have those models available, or betting that, hey, Gen AI is the next cloud and it's a great question. I tend to be in a camp which thinks that over time, if you look at the history of machine learning, things like building models became cheaper over time. Mm-hmm. Well, it always becomes cheaper. It always becomes more accessible to, you know, quite a large variety of different groups. The information on how to build those models also leaks, and people leave one company and get another. So I really hope that the future is going to be that the technology is going to spread and more people are going to be able to build those kind of models and tune them to whatever needs they see, whatever underrepresented groups they see in the society, so that you have a diversity and not a single or a few heads of pity about this topic. So this is my hope. I do think that the openness helps here, but I do think also that it's worth being careful about opening everything. It's worth putting some sort of guards or government laws against misuse or against, you know, possible ways these models can be used for some legal purposes. So it's certainly worth doing that. But I did hear in the industry some quite radical, in my opinion, propositions of, say, allowing the models to be only created by very, very specific list of, say, companies or institutions. And that to me seems quite a risky path to take.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's interesting, you know, OpenAI, of course, Sam Altman famously went to Congress in the United States and said, we need to regulate AI. I'll help you write the regulation. We need to decide who gets to, you know, get a license to train the models. And of course, a lot of people raise red flags about that when, you know, the biggest company with $10 billion says that they want to be the one to help give out the certificates of who can and can't do it. So I think there'll be pushback. Of course, there's the open source community. I think a lot of the stuff Meta has done has, honestly, it's kind of interesting. I'm not usually like a huge fan of Meta and Facebook and whatnot, but some of the open source stuff they've done with AI, I think is really interesting. And I got it. I just have to, you know, give them credit where credit's due on that. And even a lot of the infrastructure they built. So very cool. See, like, kind of what we're seeing in the space. I think inevitably, whether there's regulation or not, like if there's too much regulation, people are just going to get like bootlegged open source models. You're going to have them on a thumb drive and it's going to be your, you know, open source model that doesn't have the OpenAI guardrails or whatever, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. In any case, I guess based on your really extensive experience you've had in this space, something I would love to ask you about as we kind of wrap up the show is, you know, what advice would you give to companies looking to implement AI solutions responsibly today?
I'm glad you asked about the responsibly part, because that's, I think it's quite important nowadays with the models don't only being viewed the binary answers, this is good, this is bad. Your mistake is costly for the binary models, but it's not nearly as costly. It can be not nearly as costly as the mistake for generative models, which can significantly offend someone, you know, can really provide some really unpleasant or illegal justifications or descriptions. And because of this larger impact of specifically the generative models, because of how much risk they have, I'd say that it's really important if you're developing some sort of a product based on Gen AI, not to save on evaluation, not to, you know, evaluate on your users, say, okay, well, just tell me what's good and what's bad. Really invest in evaluation, really think about in advance, how are you going to judge whether the model is not providing risky answers, not providing some unbiased opinion which reinforces some sort of societal problems, but really, you know, provides great experience with getting real truths instead of making up facts or hallucinating what they call. And so it should be done, in my opinion, really early in the process of model development. So I'd say that this is if you asked me about single advice, I'd say that evaluation is really worth it. It proves that you take things responsibly, you actually think about what you built and you're sure about it, and you can demonstrate.
I love that. I think that's some really solid advice. Fedor, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciated a lot of your advice and insights. It's really refreshing because I get a lot of different perspectives on this show. Mm-hmm. And I really think you're on the right track with, you know, what you guys are working on, what you're doing, and kind of your philosophy behind it. So that's always that always makes me happy to hear. If people are interested in getting in contact with you or Toloka and finding out more about what you guys are building and working on, what's a good way for them to do that?
Yeah, they can connect me on LinkedIn, or I think that's the best way. Just find me on LinkedIn and okay. Connect. Right.
Okay.
And thanks for having Wonderful. Me. It was a great conversation. It was interesting and fun and active.
Yeah. Yeah, it was super enlightening. So really appreciate you coming on. To the listeners, thanks so much for tuning in to the AI Chat podcast. Make sure to rate us wherever you get your podcasts and have a wonderful rest of your day.